Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Buckets over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 podcast. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit us up 331-979-1369, text and voicemail line. Wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, react to us. Anything that we're talking about, anything you guys want to talk about as far as the Chicago Bulls go, maybe the playoffs, maybe the draft coming up, anything and everything you want to talk about, send it to us at our text and voicemail line. Once again, 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. So today on the show, we've got a couple different things we want to dive into. Obviously talked a little bit about the playoffs yesterday. We're kind of going to separate that out and try to give you guys as much Bulls content as we can while the playoffs are going on. Obviously highlight some of those things going on as the weeks progress. But we really want to stay locked in, not to be punny or anything, but stay locked in with the Bulls here.
I see what you did there, Jordan.
It was like one of the most brutal jokes ever made on this show, so I apologize for that in advance. But to be serious here, we want to keep you guys tapped into what's going on with the Bulls all summer long. So you might hear conversations or things talked about, or we might bring up things in an extended conversation and might shy away from the playoffs a little bit, but we definitely will keep you guys updated for that. But today's episode, I want to talk about the disappearance of Gar Foreman. So I know we've talked about this a couple different times just briefly throughout the season and maybe what that meant to the Bulls organization and what the PR team has done this season with it. But I kind of want to dive deeper into that with you, Matt, and just have a conversation about that and what's going on after year one in the rebuilds. And then that's going to lead us into mailbag. We've got a voicemail and some text questions from our line at 331-979-1369. So we'll get into all of that. But Matt, I got to start first with our rookie in Lauri Markkanen decided to be a little bit more personable, which is good. I like to see this. He hopped on a podcast called Pardon My Take. For a lot of the listeners out there, especially our younger crowd, you probably know what this is from Barstool Sports. Great interview from Lauri Markkanen, who they warned before you listen to the interview that, you know, his English isn't that great, which I thought he did a fantastic job with this interview. And he seemed to be able to bring out more of that personable side that I think a lot of Bulls fans want to see. And that's something that I think a lot of fans, especially the younger generation watching the NBA, wants to see. And the way he does it on social media, I think, carried over.
You actually had an interesting career path to get to the NBA. You could have probably gone straight from playing overseas in Europe into the NBA, but you chose to go to Arizona for a year. What was that decision-making process like?
For me, it was just learning as much as possible. I knew I wasn't ready. Maybe if I get drafted, I don't know if I would play at all. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, before that, I was just playing overseas. So I knew the game was different in college, and I think that was the way to go to get to the league. So,
mm. Oh, were you upset that when you got to the NBA, you had to take a pay cut from playing at Arizona?
Wow. Well, That's a cheap shot.
Yeah, that is a cheap shot. That is, now he's not comfortable.
I had to say it.
I've heard that joke a lot.
Have you? No, that's the first time that he's heard it.
Yeah.
Edit that out.
Are you the tallest person?
I made that one up.
to this interview, especially when he got comfortable. But what's going on? How? What did you think about this interview?
Yeah, I enjoyed the marketing interview, and like I just to be completely upfront and honest here, I don't listen to Pardon My Take regularly. I think most of what Barstool does is obnoxious and stupid and panders to a sub IQ of sports fans that I don't respect. That being said, they get great guests on their podcast. You can't knock them for that. And I think they usually do a pretty good job of making their podcast guests feel comfortable and willing to talk about a variety of topics. So, I mean, I wasn't like blown away or, you know, slapping my knees laughing with anything that was said in this marketing podcast appearance, because he's still, you said, you know, a bit more personable, maybe opened up a bit more for them, but he's still a pretty closed off guy. And the, you know, English as a second language is still a challenge. It's not like you can't understand Lowry when he's talking, but he still, because of that limitation, his answers are very short. And it doesn't matter if he's talking to some guys with a podcast or he's talking to members of the Chicago media in the locker room after the game. He gives very short answers. And I thought that was one of the interesting things about this interview he did with the PMT guys, is that they asked him what it was like making that transition from being a college player at Zona, where media commitments were much more limited and constricted than they are in the NBA, where you're playing for a team that has 82 games, interviews, 82 pregame, 82 postgame, anytime there's a practice where media is allowed in. So Markkanen talked about how, just because he had to and was forced to over the course of this rookie season of his, he became a little bit more comfortable with the consistent presence of the media and consistently being asked questions and forced to answer questions. And I think he will continue to improve with his media skills the more he is in this league and the more he is speaking English on a daily basis and getting more comfortable with that environment. So, that being said, I mean, it was an okay interview, but it's not like I was blown away by any of it.
Sure. And just to go back to your point, are you knocking my sports IQ a little bit? Because I know there's a lot of our fans out there that like Barstool Sports. I am one of them. I've followed Barstool Sports for a long time now. I take it for what it is. You know, it's a parody sports account. It does deliver to a certain audience. But pardon my take, I've been a listener since their first episode, since they were, I don't know, a couple thousand downloads when their shows were bad. So I kind of went into this interview and I'm a religious listener too. So I kind of went into this understanding what they were going to do with Lowry Markkanen. And for a lot of guys, where I think there's been interviews where they kind of go badly just because there's the barrier of the language, but also guys don't really understand their shtick and what they're trying to do on the podcast, I think Lowry Markkanen felt a little bit more comfortable in this. And like you said, he does give short, deliverable answers, but I thought that can improve. And I think where he started this season, maybe with some of those answers and just his press conference, if you go all the way back to his very first press conference as a Chicago Bull, and then to that interview now where he feels a little bit more comfortable, and just some of the stuff he's doing on social media too, I think I am enjoying. And I think he's going to learn, you know, he's going to pick things up as he continues to be a professional in this league and learns from some other guys on this team. But I understand it. I get it. But it was kind of fun. You kind of learned a little bit about, if you didn't know anything about his brother's a professional soccer player, some of his interests. I thought it was kind of cool to get an idea. I didn't know that he hadn't been back to Finland since the NBA season had started. I think maybe he was back there when his girlfriend was pregnant or delivering their first baby.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought he went back to Finland for the birth of his child, but I guess his girlfriend, wife, whatever, was also in the States and not back home in Finland.
So maybe that was it. But I think that's going to be something cool that I want to kind of monitor, if he's going to be on social media at all or just any attention that goes on in Finland, because I want to see kind of what that reaction is of this is really what their first player that's kind of like their born bred superstar, or hopefully superstar for them. So I'm kind of interested. And like we had talked about before, like the listenership and the readership too has kind of shifted, and you see like more people gauged in the NBA and also the Chicago Bulls because of Lauri Markkanen. So I thought that was pretty cool. But you're right. I think there's going to be a lot of different things that go into this, and I would assume that in 2-3 years from now, you're going to look back at maybe some of these interviews that he's done now and say, man, he's a completely different person, because I think he's just like kind of like that, you know?
And two other interesting notes. You mentioned that he, you know, one of the things we learned that he hadn't been back to Finland his entire rookie season. He also said on this interview on the PMT pod, he doesn't drink. He's never had an alcoholic drink in his life, and he doesn't swear.
Okay. Okay. Nice. You can say whatever you want, by the way. It's a podcast. Wow. So you can swear in Finnish if you want. Mm. Not in America.
Give us a Finnish swear word.
I don't swear.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I'll look it up later.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, oh, I mean, I wasn't necessarily surprised to hear him say those things about himself or reveal those things about himself. I don't know if that was already common knowledge. To me, it wasn't. It was the first time I had heard him say that. But it just kind of goes along with who I think Markkanen is, getting to know him in his rookie season, just with his personality, the way he carries himself, kind of a soft-spoken guy. And it was sort of like a little bit more of the background information on the kind of guy he is, and that he is not somebody the Bulls necessarily need to worry about being a party animal in any sense, which, as more money gets thrown at you, you know, hoping and assuming the Bulls keep this guy around as a franchise player, you get a lot of money, your ego grows, you get exposed to all kinds of party life as an NBA player, especially on road trips. And I was like, well, that's, you know, one worry off the list. Markkanen is a straight edge guy. Not only does he doesn't drink, the dude won't even swear. So then that was the other thing I thought of. Depending on the kind of player he turns into on the court, and the more he feels like he earns respect as a quality borderline star player in this league, will we see some potty mouth come out? Will we ever catch Markkanen on a broadcast swearing on the court because of a call or something he's disagreeing with? Because that's a pretty bold statement to say, I never swear. I mean, come on, never? Really, Lowry? Never?
Yeah, and I wonder if he would be sly enough to not even say it in English or, you know, say...
Well, that's because the PMT guys were asking him, like, what are some Finnish curse words? And that was Lowry's answer. He's like, oh, no, I don't swear.
So I don't know. That's a funny. That's kind of, as he gets acclimated to the American culture and what goes on here, and sort of his teammates too, which I thought was another interesting point. Just to real quick, is they talked about who was sort of his friends on this team, guys that he was closer with. He brought up Paul Zipser for one.
Paul Zipser,
which,
who were high
talking about
on.
Paul Zipser. I don't know if he's going to be back this year unless the Bulls pick up his tiny option.
Hopefully they're not too close.
Yeah, right.
Because Paul Zipser is not long for this world.
But he also mentioned too that he had said that to another reporter at that time when Chris Dunn was sitting right next to him, and he kind of laughed it off. He was like, yeah, Chris got kind of mad. It was like, looked over at me. So I thought that was pretty funny. So it sounds like Markkanen is this guy that, while he is kind of closed off and a little bit more to himself, I feel like in that locker room, you kind of get I just got a little bit of here and there where I thought, okay, a guy that's more loose with his teammates every single day, like, you got a little bit here and there in this interview to kind of understand what his personality is. I'm sure that flourishes throughout the locker room and on the floor with these guys, and especially the hard work that he puts into for basketball. So that adds to all of that. So I don't know. I was pleasantly surprised by this interview, because a lot of times things can go bad, especially if you don't know what's going to go on in an interview, or especially if you go into a show where you don't understand what their premise is, what they do. Stacey King actually is one of the more famous, pardon my take, bad interviews, is he didn't really get the whole pardon my take shtick, and it was just ended up being on their list of one of the worst interviews of all time. So it can go very bad and it can go very good. So I like this interview a lot, so I suggest you guys go check it out. It's probably about 25 or 30 minutes long. So if you want to learn more about him, definitely go there. That's pardon my take on Barstool. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, want to talk about this disappearance of Gar Forman, because it's a very interesting story that I don't think a whole lot of Bulls personnel or Bulls people, Bulls writers are really covering, and this is a story that I think is more intriguing than maybe people think about. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. All right, Matt, so let's dive into this. So Gar Forman, obviously before this year, was sort of the face of what that front office was doing. John Paxson was a little bit more behind the scenes. Saw that completely flip-flop, and for good reason. And I think out of any of the PR moves that the Bulls, Chicago Bulls in general, made this season, it was to remove Gar Forman from speaking to the media, to talking about players, to being sort of that that face of what's going on in that front office. And John Paxson, I think, has done a really good job, and he's always been good at that, though. So him sort of stepping into that role again and interacting with the media, I think has been a lot better for the Bulls in terms of their sort of, I guess I would put it as their attention and what is being covered in terms of negativity and positivity. This was the first move in which they needed to make, but I think it's kind of weird that Gar Forman hasn't been around at all. Like, we haven't heard him, I'm sure, outside of Chuck Swirsky and maybe Neil Funk and Stacey King and maybe even Sam Smith. We haven't heard a whole lot from him, and I don't wonder if a lot of these reporters talked to him or what he has been doing. And I know a lot of fans have been wondering what he's been doing. What do you make of this whole situation? Because it is very bizarre for somebody to go from being in front of the cameras talking about the franchise, being sort of that face, to just completely disappearing over a matter of a summer.
Well, I think, you know, the thing we need to highlight here, and it's something we've said on the show before, is that so often Bulls fans lump them together, right? And this term Gar Pax that just sort of gradually spawned because of the simplicity of the brevity of referring to the Bulls front office as a two-headed monster, a two-headed idiot, whatever you want to call them. It's just easy to lump them together. But the Bulls family, the Reinsdorf family, as much as they have faith in John Paxson and Gar Forman and their respective responsibilities and the fact that they see them as two individuals and not one two-headed person, they are also aware of the fact that if this Bulls tandem of Paxson and Forman are going to remain together, which everything we've heard, even after year one of a rebuild that people are, you know, wishy-washy about, still no news, not even whispers about either guy being on a hot seat of any kind. The Bulls and the Reinsdorf family are still aware of the fact that when it comes to popularity among the fan base, Paxson still has a little bit more leeway, still has a little bit more wiggle room, and certainly has a lot more respect as a guy who has been a part of this franchise for a very long time, both as a player, as a coach, and as a front office executive. Gar Forman is, if you talk about front office people in the city of Chicago, might be the least popular one. I think it's not ridiculous to suggest that. The Bulls know that Gar Forman is not well liked. The Bulls know that Gar Forman's strong suit is not talking to the media. So what do? They make a big decision, trading Jimmy Butler, starting on a new fresh page, and they say, Paxson, you are the guy to talk to the media from here on out. Gar, you work with your scouting team. You work on contract negotiations. That's what you're good at. You do that in the privacy of your office, and we won't ask you to do any more media relations stuff. So it's a little odd that a guy who is the general manager of a team we have not heard from in a year. But, I mean, I don't think I'm alone in saying I don't mind. I would rather it's John Paxson coming to us, talking to us in this end-of-season press conference, telling us, here's the state of the team. Here's what I feel about our season that just ended. Here's what I feel about what we need to do moving forward. I would rather have Paxson be that guy than Gar Forman, because I like John Paxson more than I like Gar Forman.
Hey, I'm with you. I think when we talked about this multiple times, I think we were both agreeing on the fact that these are two separate entities. And that's why I like when you repeat that to our fan base, not only the Bulls fans out there that maybe are new to our show, but also the returning listeners from this entire season, because we've had this conversation multiple times. I find it very bizarre for a guy that went from talking all the time in front of the media and sort of being, like you said, the butt of a lot of Bulls jokes on Twitter, on social media, a lot of a lot of scrutiny went Gar Foreman's way more so than I feel like John Paxson's. I also see a lot of differences in John Paxson this year than maybe in the past years, and maybe that's because they picked a new direction. Things are looking a little bit better than maybe they did over the last 2 or 3 years. I just remember back to the end of the year press conference last year where John Paxson was very short, not I wouldn't say like rude or anything like that, but very stern when he was answering questions to people maybe he didn't want to answer. And obviously after the seasons that the Bulls had there were a lot of questions, a lot of shakeup, a lot of mistakes made by the front office that were going to have to be handled. But I've seen kind of a transformation in him as well. Like, how about this? We didn't talk about this during the John Paxson press conference, but have you ever seen him before at the end of a season thank not only the PR team, but multiple beat reporters, including Casey Johnson and a few other guys that are there literally every day? He thanked the Bulls TV staff. He thanked the broadcasters, like, right off the bat. That didn't happen last year. That didn't happen the year before. I went and rewatched all of them, and there was nothing like that. So not only is there a change from the dynamic going on with Gar Foreman and John Paxson, but I think John Paxson has played into that role a little bit better this year. We'll see going forward, but I like it better. And I think you're right about John Paxson too, having a little bit more leeway than Gar Foreman. But do people forget that Gar Foreman won a NBA Executive of the Year award in 2011? He was part of that group that oversaw drafting not only Taj Gibson, but Derrick Rose and Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon. And that was when he was the director of player personnel and then also turned into the general manager. So him sort of taking that step back and going behind the curtains and nobody really hearing from him or seeing him and spending the majority of the season on the road, which John Paxson had told the radio broadcasters on 670 The Score that that's what he had been doing all season. I'm interested. I'm very curious to see what kind of work that gets put in, because now that he doesn't have to concern himself with talking to the media or dealing with all those things that maybe John Paxson took over, maybe we're going to get back to not only his scouting team, but doing what he is very good at, is scouting players and making deals, calling agents, doing the contract negotiations. And maybe that the Bulls realize that now that they made that misstep a couple years ago when they were allowing him to maybe take more of the forefront, John Paxson doing the flip. I'm very curious, but I think it's just kind of bizarre. It was a good move on the Bulls' part, but just very bizarre that you just all of a sudden he disappears out of nowhere.
Yeah, and you wonder. I also took note of what you mentioned, Jordan, with Paxson taking the time to thank members of the Bulls media and PR team and all that stuff. That, and you're right. That's the first time we've ever heard something like that from him. And I just think that when it comes to the disappearance of Gar, that's something that hasn't necessarily been asked that much by members of the Chicago Bulls media. There were, I think, some questions at some point this season that said, you know, we've noticed that Gar isn't around. What's the deal? You know, are people's jobs still the same jobs? And Paxson came out and said, look, you know, we still have the same system. We still have the same hierarchy. Here are Gar's responsibilities. Here are my responsibilities. Gar reports to me. I report to Michael and Jerry. Nothing has changed. Our jobs are our jobs. And kind of glossed over the fact that we're hearing and seeing less of Gar Foreman. But I mean, I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is that John Paxson is also aware, and Gar Foreman himself is also aware, that Gar Foreman is not very popular in this city. So if you're trying to win back members of the fan base that are unhappy, unimpressed, you know, just completely dispirited with what the front office has done in recent years, why would you parade out the guy who most people in this city are sick and tired of? And why would you parade out the guy who, even with all of the Gar Pax usage, which has gotten out of control, if you asked a pool of 100 Bulls fans randomly, if you could see one of those guys removed from their position and replaced, John Paxson and Gar Foreman, don't you think pretty confidently that somewhere upwards of 70 of those 100 random Bulls fans polled would choose Gar Foreman? If one of them could be fired.
See it.
I think that's the case. I think it's not too foggy of a situation to know that he is the unpopular one. So they know that. They all know that. So if they're trying to win back this fan base and this whole new slogan they had this season in year one of a rebuild, run with us, commit with us, do this with us, all like everybody in, everybody on board, they know they have a loyal fan base, and they know that that loyal fan base is hanging on by a thread right now because everybody has so many questions and judgments about what they've done. Knowing that that's the case, why parade Gar out there if everybody in that organization knows that he is unpopular in this city? To me, it's that simple. And Paxton's not going to come out and say that. Yeah, I know my colleague, Gar Forman, is not popular among the media, among the fan base. No, why would he say that? But that's why.
Another thing is, too, real quick, this is a really big summer for Gar Forman, right? I mean, we've talked about it, and John Paxton even mentioned it, that Gar Forman's going to be integral in part of that Zach LaVine contract negotiations going on this summer. Not only that, Gar Forman's been on the road the entire year and the entire season scouting players. The Bulls have two draft picks. They've got the number 6 pick and the number 20 from the Pelicans pick. So this is a really big summer for Gar Forman. If Gar Forman lands on two out of the three of these, say he lands on the number 7 or number 6 pick, and the Zach LaVine contract ends up being kind of more favorable and what Bulls fans would like to see, this might save his job, like in terms of longevity. We're talking 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now. And I know we heard rumblings about a possible extension early in October, and that might not have been true, but my thing is I think Gar Forman makes his money, makes his job this summer with not only the two draft picks in the first round, but also the contract negotiations going on with Zach LaVine and maybe some of the other guys that they're going to look to re-sign long term. So if you're looking for, I don't know if Bulls fans are still very angry at Gar Forman or kind of just over it and ready to continue to move on, move to that next chapter. But I would continue to pay attention to not only who they've scouted, but who they draft this summer, and also maybe the contract negotiations going on with Zach LaVine. So I think out of all of those, this will buy probably Gar Forman at least 2 or 3 more years. And if things do go really sour, he'd probably be the first one out instead of John Paxson. But who knows?
And that's something that I would say will be interesting to see, because those are Gar's responsibilities, the scouting, the draft, and the negotiation, the contract negotiations this summer. Will it still be Paxson who's coming out and explaining, here's who we took in the draft and here's why? Will it be Paxson coming out and saying, here's how these contract negotiations went down and here's, you know, here's what we feel good about with this contract that we all just agreed to? Or, because that's Gar's field, will they actually let Gar come out and talk about that? To me, I wouldn't be surprised if, even though those are Gar's realms of responsibility, it's still Paxson facing the fire, facing the media, and explaining exactly what went down. Because I think now that they've sort of made this decision that Paxson is the face of the front office, I don't see them changing that. Even if Gar is sticking around long term, you know, why change that? Here are the things that Gar did. Now, let's let Paxson explain them to you. I think they feel comfortable with that being the system.
I would completely agree with you, and I think a lot of Bulls fans would too as well. Got to take another short break here. Be back in 60 seconds with your voicemails, your text message in this week's segment of Bulls Mailbag. Stay with us right here on Locked On Bulls. All right, for the final segment of the show today, taking your mailbag questions. Once again, you can hit us up on Twitter, on social media, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls, or Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Send us all of your questions. Anytime you want to send us a question, you want to hear it discussed on the show, tweet at us, send us a Facebook message, or text or leave a voicemail at 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Every Wednesday we do mailbag, so make sure you get your questions in, even if it's throughout the week. If you're listening to an episode on Friday or over the weekend and you've got a burning question that you want to hear answered on that Wednesday, we always pick through all of our questions throughout the week to try and come up with the best ones to answer on the show. So make sure you're doing that. Once again, 331-979-1369. Matt, you want to kick us off with our first question of the day?
Sure. This one comes to us on our text line from area code 847, who asks, in the Bulls end of season press conference, Paxson mentioned that Markkanen is going to have to work on his body this offseason to build strength. Do you think this is Paxson hinting that the Bulls would like Markkanen to be able to play minutes at the five and potentially become the starting center of the Bulls' future? That could allow Bobby to enter the starting lineup, but Portis has shown major improvements and I think he's best suited to a sixth man role. And then he also mentions that this could also be impacted by who the Bulls take in the top of that upcoming draft, especially if they draft a big. But so what are your thoughts on that, Jordan? Do you think Paxson was talking about Markkanen playing minutes at the five when asked about building up his body this offseason?
I don't think that was like the number one overall goal when he was talking about that. Like, we've mentioned it before. If we're talking about goals for Lauri Markkanen, for Chris Dunn, for Zach LaVine this summer, I think one of the main points we hit on right as the season ended last week was saying, I hope Lauri Markkanen takes another step in his progression physically to get to the point where we see transformations. Like, if you look at Anthony Davis's first year in the league compared to his third or fourth year in the league, you look at Giannis's transformation in terms of his body. Look at some of the other guys, smaller guards in the league that have transformed their bodies. Victor Oladipo, one of them. But for big men especially, you want to see guys not only build strength, but build a little bit of size. For Markkanen, I think it's going to be all about strength. You know, you see him attack the rim, especially later on in the season. We've seen more confidence out of him, willing to attack the basket, dunk over guys, do things that I don't think normally at the beginning of the season he was very comfortable doing. But now you saw that kind of that confidence come into his game late in the season. So I think if he takes it to the next level as far as his physicality goes, it's going to help him attack the rim at least. I don't know about position changing and forcing Bobby Portis into that starting lineup. It's going to be an interesting question, especially what they do at center. But I mean, you've got Robin Lopez for another year. You've got Cristiano Felicio here for another 3 years. Bobby Portis has done a mixed bag of playing the four and the five. It's probably not out of the realm of possibility, but I don't think that's what really he was mentioning or really focusing on when he was talking about Markkanen adding some more muscle, getting a little bit bigger, hitting the weight room this summer. I think it was just overall progression, because you want a guy with his skill set to get a little bit bigger. You want him to be a little bit stronger. And remember, Lauri Markkanen is only 20 years old right now. And I'm telling you, go back and look at those progressions of some of the NBA players at his position and how they've transformed their bodies and what it's done to their game, because a lot of those guys who put in the work, it's resulted in the box score and in their stats and in their game. So I think that's more so where it was going than anything else.
Yeah, and I would agree with you that I don't think Paxson was specifically talking about Markkanen building his frame to play the five, although that's certainly, and again, this will depend on who the Bulls take in this upcoming draft and who sticks around long-term around Markkanen. They'll probably experiment with playing him at the five. I mean, look at some of the things that the Warriors have done with playing Draymond at the five, and he's certainly a very small player for that position. You could talk about the Cavs using Kevin Love at the five. Like, there are plenty of guys who aren't a traditional center, which that position is disappearing quickly in the NBA, that play significant minutes at that position. I think that's within the capabilities of the player that Markkanen can become at the NBA level, but that's not exactly it. And I think that, and Markkanen said just on that podcast that we were talking about earlier in that at part of that interview, he's 225 right now. He's a legit 7-footer and 225. So if you look at Markkanen this season, it's not like the guy was a stick figure. He's not skin and bones. He's already got a good amount of muscle. I think he can add a little bit to that this offseason, but when you talk about some of the other guys that have a similar body type, a legit 7-footer with his length that can put the ball on the floor and shoot. I mean, Kevin Durant. Remember how skinny Kevin Durant was when he came into this league?
Absolutely.
Antetokounmpo, the same thing. You know, they played different positions, but the same thing about Joakim Noah. When he came out of Florida, Joakim Noah, you know, couldn't have weighed more than 185 pounds soaking wet. So, like, Markkanen already, I think, has a leg up on some of those guys that have a similar body type when he came in as a rookie. And I would also say this. I'd like to see Markkanen add a little bit of strength and kind of build out his frame a little bit. But if you're talking about a guy who can become one of those insanely diverse offensive weapons at the four, you don't want him to bulk up too much because it takes away from some of the finesse and athleticism that really you want his game to be about. It's not like you're going to throw Markkanen in the five and say, all right, you're a center now, and like post him up and only do that. I want him to still have the athleticism and the quickness to do all of the things he can do with his given body type. Don't over-musculate yourself and lose out on the diverse kind of player that you can be.
I'm with you, and I think it's, I don't know, it would be kind of weird. How do you stretch the floor with Markkanen's game when he's playing the five? There's like different responsibilities, I think, when you're playing the four and the five. And I don't know. I don't see it right now. Maybe that is their plan a couple years down the road or a year or two from now. I think it was more so just, you know, add on to what he was doing this season. And I think you're going to see that when he comes into Chicago, stays here for this summer and working on not only his game, but his strengths. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun progression to watch for Lauri Markkanen. So I think to answer their question as a whole, I think we both agree that I don't think for right now it was more pressed to see him play the five next year. It's more so, I think, just to build on everything that he had in his rookie season. So the next question here comes from the 620. It says, hey guys, just listened to Monday's podcast. Couldn't disagree more with your take on rather having Michael Porter than Mikal Bridges. Bridges is more versatile, more athletic, a better fit with the Bulls, and I believe has potential to be the third best player. Michael Porter isn't that long and struggled to turn the corner in high school. I have high doubts he will be able to be the star that Bridges can be. What do you guys think?
Yeah, this one definitely made me raise an eyebrow because I'm sorry, I don't see it. You honestly think that Mikal Bridges, more versatile, more athletic, better fit? I might give you better fit because he projects to be a 3 and D wing more so than Porter fits into the 3. Porter can play the 3 and the 4, but at the NBA level, he probably would fit more perfectly as a 4. So given that the Bulls have Markkanen in that spot and Portis in that spot, trying to ask Porter to play the three with his defensive limitations right now is not the ideal fit. But for this texter to say Porter isn't that long when comparing him to Bridges, I'm sorry, but Mikal Bridges is 6'7 with a 7-foot wingspan. Michael Porter Jr. is 6'10 with a 7-foot wingspan. So they have the same wingspan, and Porter is 3 inches taller. So I'm not exactly sure what you're saying there. And to me, the big point is this. Before the back injury, and yes, that's a bit of a scare, Porter projected to be the number one overall pick in this draft, the MVP of the McDonald's All-American game. For a Bulls team that is rebuilding and needs to hit on a star player to add to this core, I can't see how you can look at Bridges and say Bridges has a higher ceiling in the NBA than Michael Porter. Higher floor? Maybe. We might be able to agree that Mikal Bridges would become bare minimum, assuming, you know, healthy whatevers for both players. Bare minimum, Mikal Bridges might have a higher floor than Michael Porter Jr. But for this Bulls roster, you don't need a highest floor. You want highest ceiling. Because that's what a rebuild needs. It needs a star player. Denzel Valentine, maybe in the 2016 draft, highest floor of the options the Bulls had on the table. Highest ceiling? Absolutely not. And that's not the thing that the Bulls can afford to do right now. I'm sorry, I like Mikal Bridges. I think he's going to be a good NBA player. But assuming, even if the Bulls don't win their way up into the top three and they're picking sixth, if Bridges is obviously probably going to be there at six, and so is Porter, you take Bridges over Porter? I think you're nuts. I'm sorry, I don't think Mikal Bridges is worth the sixth overall pick. And Paxson, I don't think, does either. He said, we need a wing, but we're not in a position to overlook talent. They have to go best available, and they have to go highest ceiling. Both of those things, to me, say Porter over Bridges.
You bring up a bunch of good points, and I think I'm with you here. And with the texter, too, I get what you're saying here, and the thing that I hate the most about this time of the year is these words that people like to throw out there, and I think it's such lazy analysis. The whole versatile, more athletic, the longer, the struggled, blah, blah. Like, I'm not trying to bag on the texter at all, because there are hundreds of thousands of writers who do the same thing, hundreds of thousands of fans who do the same thing around the draft. I am very guilty of it. You're guilty of it as well. We do it all the time, but I hate putting comparisons on guys, especially a guy in Michael Porter Jr. who played, 53 minutes of college basketball this season? So you're going to compare him off of his high school play, which is, almost a year and a half, 2 years ago, to a Mikal Bridges who, in a fit with a Villanova team, was very good. And he's been there longer. We got to see him all year. They won a national championship. I just don't think it's fair to compare the two players. Comparing a guy's high school performance to a guy that's been at Villanova for 3 years, I get it. You like Mikal Bridges. If it was anybody else, if you had put anyone else's name in that slot, Mohamed Bamba, Trae Young, Colin Sexton, whoever you want to throw in there outside of Michael Porter Jr., I'm probably with you. Okay. I'm with you. I'm with you to take Mikal Bridges over Trae Young. I'm with you to take Mikal Bridges over Colin Sexton. I'm with you to take Mikal Bridges over Kevin Knox. Some of these other guys, but Michael Porter Jr., especially like what you had said, Matt, that at the beginning of the year, before the back injuries, he was considered the consensus number one overall pick. So to pass on a guy like that because maybe you haven't seen him play in 8 months or you only saw 53 minutes of him play over the last year, I think it's kind of foolish. Let's take a look at, like you had said, the ceilings of both players. Right now, the Bulls, if they would have drafted Mikal Bridges, probably would be better right now, like 2-3 years. But overall ceiling and what you could develop Michael Porter Jr. into at 2 years younger than Mikal Bridges, I'm going that route, especially with the Bulls, what they're trying to do right now. You have so much young talent. So I'm with you. I would way rather see Michael Porter Jr. be the Bull and take the chance on the guy with the highest ceiling rather than take the safe bet in Mikal Bridges if it's between these two guys.
Right.
I'm with you if Michael Porter Jr. is off the board and we're talking about Trae Young or any of the other guys that might go anywhere between 6 and 10. So I think we're both in agreement. I understand what you're saying, the texter is saying, but I also say this too. Take everything into account before you just kind of use lazy analysis. And
agreed. 100% agree.
What's up, fellas? Just listening to the most recent podcast. I appreciate you guys working so hard and cranking these things out. It always gives me some stuff to listen to. For the most part, I am on board and love the dialogue. But I have to say, Matt, in your solo show just the other day, you mentioned that Zach LaVine might be looking at a contract of 4 years, $25 million per. And I guess, respectfully, I want to know, I'd be very curious to hear where you're coming up with numbers like that, because I would say that if he didn't win the dunk contest, he's a $9 million a year player. And if the Bulls pay him, I was thinking if they paid him more than $12 million a year, that they should just let him walk. If it's getting in the $15 million range, then hopefully they know something that I don't. But the fact is that even if he is worth more than that, with Hoiberg's offense, I don't see the guy fitting in unless, you know, sure, he's rusty. Sure, he's, you know, I don't know. He's kind of off his game a little bit. But that doesn't change the fact that he's never going to fit into Hoiberg's offense without some drastic changes and, you know, a higher basketball IQ. So I guess that's where I'm at. I would love to hear you guys dive into why on earth anyone would offer LaVine a $100 million contract. And I don't know. Give me some comps. I mean, I was trying to look at players that made $100 million, $25 a year, guys that made $15 a year, guys that made $10 a year. And to me, LaVine is the way he's contributing. And again, if it wasn't for the hype of winning that dunk contest, he's between a $10 and $15 million a year player, and that's probably stretching it. So anyway, looking forward to hearing from you guys. Hopefully there's some excitement leading up to the draft here. I can't wait to see what the Bulls are thinking about doing. I just wish I had more faith in their ability to recruit and find the right guy. Take it easy, fellas.
All right, thanks for the voicemail. And this goes back to what I was saying on our last Friday episode about Zach LaVine's contract. And Jordan, you dove into that a little bit more on your solo show yesterday. Look, I think the a little bit of confusion, and I'll backtrack that a little bit. I wasn't suggesting that I think LaVine is worth a 4-year, 25 per deal that, you know, winds up being a $100 million deal total. I'm saying I would be uncomfortable with the Bulls signing a deal like that, and certainly anything beyond that. I think it's still within the realm of possibility that he gets somewhere close to that. You were saying, you know, maybe 4 years, 80 mil, making like 20 mil a year per as opposed to 25. I say it's certainly possible. And I was essentially just using that figure to try to highlight they don't need to pay that because they have the leverage. Because I think, and you and I agreed on this on our episode on Monday, Jordan, LaVine's not going to get that kind of offer on the free agent market as a restricted free agent. He's just not. So the Bulls don't need to go that high. But I think Bulls fans might be surprised that when this deal comes down, and I think, and we've heard similar things from various Chicago Bulls media people, it's sounding like that the Bulls and LaVine and his camp are going to get this deal done, and it'll get done pretty quickly this offseason. It's going to be a multi-year deal, not a prove-it deal, and it's going to be sizable. And look, again, I don't think that it's LaVine getting the max deal. I don't even think it's going to be $25 million per. I think that's outrageous, but it might be close to that. Bulls fans might be surprised by how much his average annual salary is on this deal that we think is probably going to be a 3 or maybe even 4 year deal. And it might be upwards of $20 million. I don't want it to be. And that's why I was saying it's the leverage is in the Bulls side of the court, Bulls side of the negotiating table. So use that leverage and get it down ideally under $20 million per. But do I think LaVine is worth four mil, 25 per? No, absolutely not.
To me, okay, there's a couple things real quick. Let's be honest here. $9-10 million guy a year. Let's not get crazy here. I could name off of 4 or 5 guys that are making.
Yeah, that's insanely low. You have to be realistic about where the NBA salary cap is.
Absolutely, and I think
right
a
now.
Lot of fans need to understand that. Like, that's why I was going through the list of shooting guards right now and how much they were making, because you've got to understand, not only maybe you don't think there's his value there, but you have to compare it to what the market is. J.R. Smith and Wesley Matthews and Evan Fournier and all these other guys that I listed off yesterday are making between $14 and $23 million per year. So my thing is like, don't get so caught up in the money. Remember, the Bulls struggled to hit the cap floor this year. They struggled to hit the cap floor this year. They have more than enough money. So my thing is think about the player. If you invest 4 years, who cares about the money? He's going to get a big contract anyway, so who cares? The Bulls have the money to spend right now. 4 years. Do you think Zach LaVine can develop into a player that is better than some of these other guys on the market? And think again, the cap's going up in a couple years. Like, it's sort of flattened this year, but it's projected to go up again. So at that time, maybe 2-3 years down the road, if you give Zach LaVine a 4-year $75 million contract or 4-year $80 million contract where it's $18 to $20 million a year, and he turns out to be a player that's going to score 18 to 20 points a game, put up those types of numbers, even if he's a terrible defender, you're still getting halfway decent value, and at least you get to work on this project. And it goes back to, you can't afford to let this guy walk. So that suggestion, I think, is just completely out the window. And I think Bulls fans are just getting so caught up in the amount of dollars that Zach LaVine is going to get owed this summer. And it's like, who else do you think, like, where else do you think this money is going to go? What are we saving for when you traded for this piece? Like, and it's not even like you're giving him a max deal, because he's not going to get that. So I think even people flipping out that he is going, that the Bulls would entertain an idea of paying him somewhere $15 to $23 million a year, that being the high side, maybe that being the low side, somewhere in between there, I think it's kind of ridiculous. It's overblown that people like get so bent out of shape. The Bulls have money to spend. And what I was saying yesterday, just to kind of recap this whole entire thing, is like, the Bulls are going to be competitive, and we're hoping they're competitive enough to be a top four Eastern Conference team, what, three seasons from now, that's enough time to hopefully develop what Zach LaVine's game, what you're hoping his game would be. And I brought up a comparison to Chauncey Billups too. So if you didn't listen to that episode yesterday, I went through all of that with Zach LaVine's contract. But I'm just saying there is a lot of room for improvement, and there's a lot of other guys getting paid a lot of money that don't have the ceiling, don't have the athleticism that Zach LaVine has. And yeah, he's 22 years old too.
Exactly. And that's what you have to remember. As young as he is, and yes, it was frustrating to only see a 24-game sample size this season, but as young as he is, as athletic as he is, and we did even see in the small 24-game sample size his ability to be a guy offensively who can take over a game. He's got that. He has that element to himself. If the Bulls do sign four-year, $80 million, four-year, $85 million even, a lot of Bulls fans are probably going to turn their noses up at that this summer and say he's not worth that. Will he be worth that in the second year of his deal? Possible. Will he be worth that in the third year of his deal? When it comes to round to the fourth year of his contract, if the Bulls do sign him up for 4 years and he's earning somewhere a shade under $20 million or right around $20 million in that fourth year as a player in his prime at age 26, you think LaVine has a decent chance of being worth $20 million compared to what other players are making in the league at that point? I'd say, yeah, it's pretty possible that that contract turns out to be a good one, even if this summer, when it is signed, a lot of Bulls fans think, oh, he's not worth that. That's too much money. Think big picture. There's a very decent chance that a 26-year-old LaVine in his prime will be grossly underpaid in the final year of his Bulls contract.
Look, and two, I'm glad you brought that up. If the contract that he signs, he doesn't end up playing to that worth, you could rag on me for it. But what are the other options? That's what I go back to every single time. What are your other options? Okay, Kawhi Leonard's on the trading market this summer, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're somebody who's about to chirp back saying, oh, trade for Kawhi. Dude, not happening. Sign LeBron. Not happening. Not happening, bro. Like, come up with something realistic.
Absolutely.
As a counterpoint.
And the thing that I said, too, is like, if you think the Bulls are going to use all that money that they might not, if they would, in any circumstance, if they would let LaVine walk, you think in 2019 or 2020, anybody wants to come here? Okay, yeah, you have Chris Dunn and you have Lauri Markkanen, who look like good, solid pieces. And then you're going to add that number six pick. Okay, but when has that convinced any other star in this league to come here, even when we did have superstars? So, to me, I think Zach LaVine is just as important with, if you want to recruit free agents, he's part of that recruiting too. And you're going to have to pay a guy to do some of those things like that. So I'm all in to invest in 4 years of hoping and seeing what we can develop out of Zach LaVine. I think people are just thrown on and bent out of shape over the 24 games he played this season. The guy hadn't played basketball in a year, and people, I think, are spending way too much time judging him off of 24 games than the entire process of developing his game.
And you're right to bring up, and again, it can't be overlooked enough, he was coming off an ACL and only got in 24 games. What do you think is more likely? LaVine has a strong season next year, proves that he is one of the better athletic players at his position, offensively gifted, etc., etc., or that he was a flash in the pan in Minnesota and the 24 sample game sample size was actually, you know, the worst hadn't even come yet and he has a terrible season. And so you say, well, they should have just signed him to a prove it deal. What's more likely, that LaVine has a strong year next year or something worse than what we saw this season? Because if it's what's more likely and Zach LaVine has a strong second year, full year, in his comeback from his ACL, and he's on a prove-it deal, and then you got to re-sign him, then you're talking about a guy who says, well, now I think I'm actually closer to being worth max money. And then the Bulls put themselves in an even more unfortunate situation. You know, as opposed to the Jimmy Butler situation where, oh, we're going to lowball you and then let you play on the last year of your deal. Jimmy, we all saw what happened there.
I agree.
Jimmy proved himself to be worth a max-level player. Optimistically, Bulls fans should want LaVine to next season prove himself to be a max-level player and optimistically want the Bulls who have already locked him down on a multi-year deal before
Thank
that
you.
Happens.
Bingo. Matt, you just answered the entire question for this podcast. And that's I think what we're getting away from. Like, I think the negativity with Bulls fans in general and the pessimism, which I can understand. I've been there. I was there. I don't understand it from the fact that you care, that like people care so much about dollar signs when he is going to get that anyway. So to be upset that maybe Zach LaVine will make $20 million over 4 years per, like, it's not the end of the world. It's not like the Bulls cap is destroyed because you're giving him that money. You're giving them that money to invest in him. And I think when all said and done, Zach LaVine is going to put the work in to try and be that player. He said from the get-go, is the minute he got off the plane and did his first press conference, that he wants to be the face of this organization. And I think he's going to work hard enough to do that. He worked hard for a whole entire year to try and come back and not miss a beat in terms of athleticism in his game, and he did that. So I'm totally down investing in 4 years of trying to develop Zach LaVine into what we all hope and think he's going to be.
Absolutely.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. 331-979-1369, text and voicemail line. Thank you so much for everybody that sent their questions in today, and as well as for the voicemail at the end. Continue to do that. We love hearing from you guys. So whether it's NBA draft, playoffs, Bulls basketball, or anything in between, send all of your text messages, your reaction, your questions, or your voicemails to 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out. Thank you so much for listening, Bulls Nation. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. Have a great one. We are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.